Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I feel like I'm constantly reminding myself that we are all carrying around different stressors, big and small. But when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. And naturally, that can start to affect everything else around us too. Therapy can be a safe place to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. I know that therapy isn't for everyone, but it definitely has benefited me in the past with learning how to sit with my feelings, set boundaries with people, and I don't know, learn how to function with a little less shame. But if you are thinking of starting therapy and access has been hard for you, maybe BetterHelp is the right fit. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient. You can get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/makeyourbed today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/makeyourbed. Oh, good morning, sunshine. Welcome to another day of the Make Your Damn Bed podcast. Today, we're jumping right into week 3 of Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way, which is a 12-week process for reconnecting with your creative spirituality. This week is all about recovering a sense of power. She says that you might find yourself dealing with unaccustomed bursts of energy and sharp peaks of anger or joy or grief as you come into your power, because you'll start to realize that you were holding on some previously limiting beliefs. And when you start to realize that the beliefs that you held about yourself were just an illusion, it can be really scary and frustrating. So you will have to really focus on being consciously open-minded and gentle with yourself. She begins this chapter with anger. She says, anger is fuel. We feel it and we want to do something. Whether we want to hit someone or break something or throw a fit or smash a fist into the wall or tell those bastards. But by being nice people, we tend to stuff our anger, deny it, bury it, block it, hide it, lie about it, medicate it, muffle it, ignore it. We do everything but listen to it. I think that quote is really valuable because, as she goes on to say, anger is meant to be listened to. I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you've been here a while, you've probably heard me talk about how all emotions are simply there to communicate something, whether that be something that needs to improve or change slightly, or something that we need to address within ourselves. But like every emotion, anger does need to be listened to for us to be able to deal with it appropriately. I personally like to think of anger as our inner pit bull, which is there to protect us and guard us, and it really does mean well, despite having a rough life that created a little bit of defensiveness. We can still respect and love and learn from that anger. As Julia puts it, anger is a map. It shows us what our boundaries are. It shows us where we want to go. It lets us see where we've been and lets us know when we haven't liked it. Anger points the way, not just the finger. She says, in the recovery of a blocked artist, anger is a sign of health. She goes on to say that we need to act upon our anger. And again, I repeat, this does not mean to act out or to lash out or to get defensive. It simply means to pay attention to what direction it's pointing you. You have to take a little thought and consciousness and pay attention to it so you can listen to the message it's sending, though. But if you do put some thought into it, typically you can get to the bottom of where it's trying to point. Listen to when you're being petty, when people trigger you. If you're like, fuck that guy, I could make a better movie, then maybe you need to learn how to make movies. If that person who posts so much really pisses you off, is it because they post too much or that you'd like to post a little more? The problem is with anger specifically is we often feel angry that we're angry or sad that we're angry so that we can't allow it to fuel the direction or the movement going forward. She does remind us that anger should be useful and we shouldn't tend towards shame when we feel it. She does remind us that sloth or apathy or despair can be the enemy, but anger should not be. Anger should be a friend, a loyal friend that tells us when we felt betrayed or when we've betrayed ourselves. It will always tell us when it is time to act with our best interests in mind. Anger is not the action itself. It is the action's invitation. The next section is all about synchronicity. She reminds us that answered prayers can be really scary. They imply a sense of responsibility because we asked for it and now we got it. So you gotta ask yourself, what do you do with it? Which means synchronicity can be really uncomfortable. Later in this section, she says that life is what we make of it. Whether we conceive of an inner force or an outer god, it really doesn't matter. Relying on a force can, though. It makes me think of the saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, which basically boils down to you won't get attention unless you ask for it. But if you ask for it, you might actually start to receive it. She goes on to say that it makes sense that we discount our answered prayers. We call them coincidences or good luck. She says we call it anything but what it is, the hand of God or good, activated by our own hand, when we act in behalf of our truest dreams, when we commit to our own soul. She gives herself a rule of thumb that is never to ask whether you can do something. Say instead that you are doing it, and then fasten your seatbelt. You might be surprised that the most remarkable things will follow. Later in the chapter, she says, take a small step in the direction of a dream and watch the synchronous doors fly open. Seeing, after all, is believing. And if you see the results of your experiments, you will need not believe me. Just remember the maxim, leap, and the net will appear. She goes on to the next section to talk about shame by saying, some of us might be thinking, if it were that easy to take action, we wouldn't be reading this book or trying this process. But those of us who are bogged down by fear before action are usually being sabotaged by an even older enemy, which is shame. Shame is a controlling device. Shaming someone is an attempt to prevent the person from behaving in a way that embarrasses us. And making art can often feel like you are outing a family secret. It asks the question, what will they think of me once they know this? And that is a frightening question, especially if we've ever been made to feel ashamed of our curiosities or our explorations, whether those be social or sexual or spiritual. She goes on to use an example about how adults often get angry at children when they discover a family secret. How dare you snoop in the jewelry box? How dare you open that door? And she says that the act of making art is basically just exposing society to itself. Art brings things to light. It illuminates us. And it sheds light on our lingering darkness. But when people don't want to see that darkness, they get upset at the one who shows them. They kill the messenger. She says where art opens the closets and airs out the cellars and attics, it brings healing. But before a wound can heal, it must be seen. And this act of exposing the wound to air and light, the artist act, is often reacted to with shaming. She goes on to define some of the different ways we might feel shame and some of the criticism we might feel that intersects with that shaming, though she does clarify that not all criticism is shaming. She basically reminds us that we need to be firm with ourselves, but not pick at the first doubts. Instead, we must figure out how to sort through the useful and beneficial criticism. If it's accurate, it can offer relief, even if it's negative, whereas harmful criticism does not offer any type of healing. Instead, it revolves around keeping us blocked. She offers some rules of the road when dealing with criticism, which is to receive the criticism all the way through and just get it over with. You can jot down notes to yourself on what concepts or phrases most bother you, and you can jot down notes on which concepts and phrases seem useful. Then you must do something nurturing for yourself. Read an old good review or recall a compliment. Then you must remember that even if you've made truly rotten pieces of art, it might be necessary as a stepping stone to your next magnum opus piece. The ugly duckling stage is just a stage, but it's a necessary one, especially when it comes to learning and making and doing. She then asks us to review the criticism again. Does it remind you of anything from your past? Does it trigger something from your childhood? If so, it might signify an old wound we need to look at. She suggests writing a letter to the critic, not to be mailed or given, but defending your work and acknowledging what was helpful, if anything, in the criticism they proffered. And then you must get back on the horse. Make an immediate commitment to do something creative. And then you do it. Creativity is the only cure for a blockage made by criticism. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I love you so much, and I'll talk to you on Monday while you make your damn bed. Goodbye, cutie.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.